Well, good day to you, whatever time of day it happens to be. I am Art Bell, filling in for George Norrie. And this is a very, very important program, more important than many out there know, I think. Whether it's going to actually get traction and cause people to react in, I don't know, sending your congressman a note, or perhaps those of you who have been listening, you know, very closely tonight will, as he suggested, pick up the telephone and call another talk show and do a short, to-the-point presentation. And there'll be kind of a cascading effect. One could always hope for something of that nature. I don't know. But to continue as we are now is, or seems to be, to me, suicidal. Professor Forstchin back in a moment. Professor, just out of curiosity, this is yet another got you. We live with so many. We're in the age of nature getting us with H1N1, biological constructions going on in dark little labs that could end the world, little bugs that could end the world. So how do you impress on people the truly serious, real-time, right-now threat coming from a group of people who just don't care about their own lives? They just, their goal is to end the world as we know it. How do you impress on people the severity of the threat?
History.
Yeah.
Just spend a couple of hours and let's do this. Put into your head, imagine you're a Jew. And then go back and look at what you could see online, on YouTube or whatever, film footage of Auschwitz, of Buchenwald, of Treblinka. And then go look back 5 or 10 years earlier, where there were so many people saying, oh, it will never happen. Oh, the German, the Nazis are a bit crazy, but they'll never go that far. Well, we know history taught us.
They did.
And then now we actually have a regime in this world who laughs at the Holocaust, who says it never happened.
Mm-hmm.
But then in the next step, we'll then turn around and say, but if we can do it to the Jews again, we will do it. History should teach us. Now, I don't necessarily buy the line that, I mean, I'm a historian. I've been in this business 30 years. And, you know, we are doomed to keep repeating things, but by golly, there should be some things that should connect to us. And EMP is a Holocaust beyond our imagining.
All right, back to the phones. Let's go to Louisiana and Cornelius. You're on the air.
Hey, Art, God bless you and the professor. I hope you all had a happy and blessed Thanksgiving. And Gina, your call screener, and all the coast-to-coast listeners. I had a question, and I'm glad you mentioned that about Israel, because I told Gina, I said, I believe the Israelis will attack the Iranians, and that will solve our problem as far as the EMP. So that was my comment, and God bless y'all all.
Well, God bless you, and
God
thank you for the call.
Sir.
The Israelis will do lately, anytime there's a problem, Professor, we've told the Israelis, lay low, we will handle it.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you hear my sarcastic. Wasn't there a member of the administration just a couple months back that said the Israelis attempted to launch an attack on Iran, we would shoot the Israelis down?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. Again, the Jewish analogy, but it strikes home to me in a very personal sense, in that my beloved mentor is a Jew who survived World War II. The man who became very much my father figure, teaching me to be a historian, he fought. He managed to get out, and he wound up in the British Army. And most of his family died in that. The people of Israel understand that they are on the razor's edge. They see it every day.
Mm-hmm. But even Israel, in recent years, Israel at one point was very, very proactive in terms of, you know, preemption, that sort of thing. But in recent years, he'd say it, you might not agree with it, but Israel has started their own brand of political correctness as compared to what they were some years ago.
Synchronicity, sir, because I was about to say the words political correctness is destroying Israel.
All right. From Wichita, Kansas, comes Michael. You're on the air, Michael.
Hello, Art and Professor. First of all, a little ray of hope, maybe. There are several what used to be termed survivalist-type sites or blogs. Prefer to call themselves preparedness types now. But these are civilians, and the subject of EMP is being discussed, and also how to countermeasures that people can take, such as putting radios or ham gear in tuna boxes or Faraday cages. And I, of course, in the military, until in the 70s, we were still using vacuum tubes. The primary reason was for EMP protection. And, of course, aircraft is using more and more fiber optics all the time. Part of the reason for that is weight, but in addition, is it is EMP-proof. So my question, though, is what can individuals, I mean, you know, the chances of the government doing anything or doing anything in time are probably nil. So what can individuals on a personal level do? And I realize the infrastructure may be gone, but still, to protect your laptop, perhaps even your automobile, what are some of the things you can do to try to harden or EMP-proof personal equipment?
That's a totally a fair question. Professor, what about your automobile? What would you do to protect that?
Well, Mr. Bell, you know, you've hit it repeatedly where you've mentioned how do we educate? And the gentleman who's called in has hit one of the key points. There are a number of sites. I particularly recommend, I've been reading a lot of Rawls stuff, R-A-W-L-E-S, his books. He has a website that, boy, you talk about an expert who covers everything. Regarding automobiles, well, in my novel, 1 Second After, there just so happened to be a 64 Mustang and a 59 Edsel sitting around. Any vehicle, there's a lot of debate about what happens with vehicles. Anything much beyond 1980, 1985, you start getting iffy. Look up YouTube, look up Taurus EMP, or Taurus EMP, and you'll see a demonstration of an EMP zapping a Taurus. As to the technical, what to do with a modern car, I'm sorry, I'm not a tech head on that.
Mm-hmm. I think not much.
You know, I turn the key and the car turns on. I go, oh, great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to find an old Volkswagen and stick it in my garage from the early 60s.
Okay. Not a lot of people are going to end up doing that. You and I both know it. What about aircraft? Curiosity, you mentioned... He mentioned fiber optics and aircraft. It seems to me that the moment there is an EMP within line of sight, which would be very great indeed, and considering an airliner at, say, 35,000 feet, those aircraft would be falling from the sky most immediately.
I'm going to say the word synchronicity again, because while we were on commercial break, I was thinking about that. I was hoping the topic would come up. I certainly would not want to be in a 777 or one of the new Airbuses. Sir, maybe you've seen some of the news articles about the software problems that they're having with many of the new jets.
Sure.
And the pilots are no longer able to override them in time.
Right.
Now, I'm a pilot. I own an original World War II aircraft. I fly it every week. I know that thing's going to fly no matter what. You still have to get out and grab the prop and shout clear. Modern aircraft, I've heard pessimists say that go online, look at the map. You can see online where it's a map of air traffic across 24 hours. There's about 5,000 commercial aircraft in the air at around noontime.
Right.
Most of them are going to fall from the sky like a rock.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Gary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, good morning.
Hi. I'm a big fan, and I just had a quick question for the professor, and I'll take it off the air. It would seem to me that the Star Wars program would be useless only because of a basic physics law that I was taught in high school and college, was that you can't know the velocity and the position of an object at the same time. You can either know the velocity or you can know the position, not both. And so Star Wars would seem to be The kind of thing that would be, I mentioned this in a bar one time, and we tried it a couple of times, me and my friends. We sat there, and one of my friends would sit on the other end of the bar, and I would sit on the other end, and he would throw a rock, and I would try and throw a rock and hit it out of the air. It just seems absurd. I'm not saying it's not worth pursuing, because an EMP attack would be really bad, obviously, but I don't understand how that
I'm
works.
I'm not sure that a bar rock fight qualifies as a good analogy for what we're talking about here. Professor?
Well, it's a good departure point, though. Okay, person A throws a rock, and the gentleman who's just called in, he throws a rock. But remember, the rock has a thruster on it and a radar system, and is receiving data from other points as well, and tracks in on it, which is standard with any air-to-air, surface-to-air missile today. I had a long conversation several months back with a four-star, who's a really wonderful gentleman. He's been involved in the whole issue of SDI for 25 years. He said, we're no longer at the system level of considering a bullet hitting a bullet. We do have the capability, if we would invest in it, of picking a point on the bullet that we want to hit. There was a test that's declassified in which two missiles were, ballistic missiles were at a target system. Happened within the last year or two. The first missile destroyed the target. A split second later, the second missile intercepted the largest piece of the target that was tumbling off that was about a square meter. And that was at something like 8,000 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
So that second rock has a thruster and a radar and tracks.
So it can be done.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And it's a great investment.
If you have the political will to say, go ahead and do it.
Well, can I draw an analogy for 30 seconds? I don't want to take away time from the.
No, sure,
calling.
Go ahead.
I was out today shopping with my daughter for a car. My baby is about to get into an automobile. What kind of dad, and we're on the lot, we're looking at a car for around $14,000. Now imagine this conversation. I say to the guy, great, do me a favor. Pull out all those darn airbags and these safety systems and the engine block drop and everything else. How much can we knock off the price?
Yeah.
What kind of father would... Do you see my point?
I guess I do. I figured you to be buying her a little Volkswagen.
No, I walked in there and I said, I want reactive armor on the car. I want safety-rating.
Reactive armor.
I'm willing to spend the thousands of dollars necessary to protect my precious baby. Now, we're talking tens of dollars per American citizen per year to start building an effective ballistic missile defense system. Isn't it worth it?
I don't know. I'm still thinking of how to fit reactive armor onto my car. Okay. Terry in Melbourne, Florida, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. Hey, Professor. You were mentioning the Carrington event and that it happened. I noted that it happened just 2 years before the Civil War in 1861.
Mm-hmm.
And due to humans being electromagnetically affected beings, my question is, have you noted or taken any data on solar flares happening prior to war starting?
It's an interesting point, but as Mr. Bell pointed out at the beginning, organic that we are, I mean, if we were made of metal, yeah, I would be concerned. But organic that we are, that instantaneous flash of a couple hundred volts, actually would only be a couple of volts hitting you if you were standing outside. I don't think the impact would be there. But let me get, I'm jealous of where you live because you get to see all the launches.
Oh, yeah, it's great. I love it.
Unless you're wearing a pacemaker.
Yeah.
All right,
okay. Thank
you. Yep, you're very welcome, and have a good morning. To New Jersey, all the way to New Jersey. Morty, you're on the air with Professor Forrest Chen and Art Bell.
Good morning, Art. Fascinating program this morning, and it's always great to hear your voice, Art. Good morning, Professor.
Good morning, sir.
Two very quick points, gentlemen. Number one, just as a matter of information, in the year 1895, a series of solar flares completely wiped out the telegraph in the entire country. And at the time, that was considered to be quite an emergency. Point number two, concerning preparedness, I have heard that Denver, Colorado is now the unofficial capital of the United States, and that all of the most important government agencies are either already there in hardened underground facilities or will be moving to Denver. I understand the CIA and half the Pentagon are already there. So it sounds to me like our government is definitely expecting something to happen. They're not doing all of this moving for nothing.
Professor?
I've not heard that, but of course we do know at Colorado Springs, there's the old NORAD system is there, and there are, that was the big one back during the Cold War, so one could assume that there is some redundancy for some government programs there, but no, I've not heard anything related to Denver, sir.
Actually, I have. There's a lot of internet chatter about a move to Denver, and I'm not sure that I understand it. It's a Mile High City. I suppose the adjacent mountains, perhaps? I don't understand why.
Cheyenne Mountain Complex nearby.
Mm-hmm. All right, to Culver City, California, and Olin, you're on the air.
On my car radio, I put 3 1N4001 rectifier diodes in series pointing mm-hmm. from the antenna to ground, and mm-hmm. 3 more in series pointing from ground up to the antenna, which mm-hmm. gives me a plus and minus 30-amp surge capability.
Right.
Do you think that those diodes will protect my car radio from EMP?
Wow. Given Mr. Bell's background in ham radio, I'm going to pass that question to you, sir.
Okay. It's going to protect your car radio from, for example, a lightning strike or something of a lesser magnitude than a full EMP event produced by a nuclear weapon. Yes. But, you know, if what the professor is discussing occurs, your radio is going to get fried because your radio is composed of transistors and other solid-state devices that will immediately self-destruct whether or not the spike is coming in through the antenna or not. It's not going to matter. It's going to directly fry the radio or my ham rig or anything else electronic. It's going to fry it. Professor, would you argue with that?
I'm not going to argue with you at all on that.
Well, I you're the expert.
Well, no, you're actually the expert on radio equipment. And if my father had ever had a chance to look at your antenna system, he would have gone crazy.
Okay. Maryland brings Lee. Lee, you're on the air.
Yeah. They have our house has a lever outside with a box, and it cuts off the power. Surge jump that gap and go into the house and burn down the houses?
Actually,
like all the hotels and all the houses, the wires are all hooked to 2x4s, which are probably really dry.
Okay, that's a similar question. We've got very little time to the last one. In other words, you could protect yourself from the surge coming in from the electric company. But even having thrown that switch, you can't protect your electronics short of a Faraday cage from direct EMP, which would be at a level that would just simply fry everything immediately. The computers would all go, psst. Professor, hold tight. We will be back. We've got one more segment to go. We could use about 5. I'm Art Bell. Or put another way, the other side of the world, from the majority of you listening, Barry in Vancouver, British Columbia, brings up a very good point. Hey, Art, how interesting. Very few women have called the show. What does that tell you? I don't know. I just pointed out. Barry, what does it tell us? It tells us that it's kind of a technical topic. It tells us that, I don't know, Barry, I'm going to have to think about it a little bit, but it is a fact and a very interesting question. Professor William Forstchen is my guest, and he'll be back in a moment. All right, once again, I think I've got one young lady. Let me go out of order here and go to Las Vegas and Kathy. Kathy, you're a female.
Yes, listen, you know, it's funny. Just be patient with me. I'm not very technical. Most technical stuff gives me a headache, but I follow I follow along a little bit, so I basically want to make one comment and then, like, two quick questions. Okay, you know, I think most people in America, including myself previously, because I kind of discovered your station recently, and I'm terrified listening to this because I actually knew nothing about this EMP stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the average person in America would prefer to be blissfully ignorant and just go to a party, you know, mm-hmm. and they don't really want to know it because it's horrifying. And what I wanted to say was, okay, as I understand it, Barack Obama is the one who decided to close down the radar detection in Poland. And my question to you, and then I'll have one more after that, is even if Barack Obama is inexperienced, wouldn't he have advisors who would know the history of Poland, which I don't? I just picked up from what you said and a little other stuff I knew. Wouldn't he have advisors that would tell him, you know, this is, like, really important to leave this stuff on? And the other question is, what president, former president of the United States or politicians decided to let communist Chinese employees fix all this nuclear stuff that's important? And why aren't there any more Americans who can do this job anymore? And those are my questions.
Okay. Sir,
do we have about 5 more hours of airtime?
No.
No.
We could use it, but no.
Boy, you know, the day that was announced, September 17th, maybe because I'm a historian, the moment I heard it, I was like, isn't there at least one person in the White House who just said, Mr. President, why don't you do the announcement 2 days later because this is the 70th anniversary of the day Poland was knifed in the back by the Soviet Union?
Right.
And by not putting the ABM system in there, we're essentially telling the Poles, we'll throw you back to the wolves again?
Mm-hmm.
I'm angry. Yeah, I guess you can hear. I'm getting angry just remembering it.
Right.
In fact, she sort of scrambled my brain a bit just by pointing that out. It is beyond, it stretches your imagination. I think there was at least mm-hmm. one person in that entire administration.
Well, she asked about advisors. You know, a president, non-military though he may be, certainly has military advisors that he'd be advised to listen to. So,
well, and then the second point about pulling down the ballistic missile defense system. Remember that's been a alleged peace dividend issue ever since 1992. Well, the Soviet Union isn't a threat, so we don't need ballistic missile defense, which is utterly absurd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly is. All right. To North Hollywood, California, and Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. Nice to hear your voice again on the radio.
Thank you.
Yeah, real quickly here, we're running low on time. I was sort of wondering, from one hand to you, I was just wondering, have you cross-banded from your location to your antenna array in Nevada?
I'm sorry. Say that again, please. Have I done what?
Have you cross-banded, reached a signal from your location, from your antenna, and then retransmitted from Nevada?
No. As a matter of fact, I don't even have an antenna up at the moment at my current location here in the Philippines. So,
I thought you had one on your condo. Okay.
I'm working on it.
Okay, that would be sort of fun anyway. Anyway, back to what's going on here. Yeah, I worked a long time ago. I worked for a place called Veradyne. We made the trigger assembly for SDI laser
mm-hmm.
system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. Most of the systems are compartmentalized, so, you know, I don't know anything other than just the basically capacitor and resistor array that we made for the triggers. But knowing that Russia and the United States were major technological competitors, basically, and our main problem with Iran, since I met a lot of people in the military and intelligence, and I learned a lot about Iran, is basically their government is being controlled by Russian intelligence. And they put the guys in power there, and they have military bases there. We cannot ever attack Iran without going to war with Russia. So we're in a stalemate in that situation. And Bush...
Stop there for a moment. I'm not certain that's so. Could we preemptively attack Iran without engaging Russia directly, Professor? I guess it's a political
Remember,
question.
A fair part of the radical Muslim world refers to us and the Russians as the great Satan and the little Satan.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of Afghanistan still resonates deeply. If the Iranians are playing cozy with the Russians at the moment, that's part of the great game that's been going on between them for hundreds of years, and they have fought repeated wars across those hundreds of years. So So Russia might be playing a game of the moment in terms of trying to reestablish its power position, but there's no love lost between those two sides.
Yeah, I would agree. Caller, go ahead.
Yeah, my main question is this. William Jefferson Clinton, President Clinton, and Bush both agreed on this one thing, and Clinton said this fairly clearly, and I want your opinion on this. He said that we would absorb a first strike on any country with a weapon of mass destruction. Now, I know the answer to this. I don't want to say on the air, but I just wonder what your opinion is and what you've heard about this, us absorbing our first strike.
I would clarify that slightly. We have always had the policy of launch on detonation, not launch on warning. Launch on warning means, oh, our radar is picking up their missiles. Okay, guys, hit the button. Let's go. And then we find out it's some Canadian geese. And we've just destroyed the world. So there were certain target areas in the United States throughout the Cold War that we kind of figured that's where the bombs will hit first. It will give us at least a couple more minutes to launch out of our facilities in the Dakotas. So I think that's more the point we're looking at here. We'll take the very first hit, but the difference now is with EMP, we're not talking about the detonation of hundreds of weapons. We're talking about 1 to 3 weapons. Which is an asymmetrical first strike, something entirely new.
Right. And for those of you that didn't have an opportunity to hear the whole show, go to the web and listen to the the first couple hours so that you're grounded on this very, very important topic. Austin, Texas, Jeff, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Professor, I had a quick question in regards to maybe a new twist on the subject. But Professor Hagee, or Pastor Hagee, out here in Texas, has a ministry, Christian ministry, and he's been discussing EMPs and talking about his great love for Israel and, you know, protection for Israel and EMP threat to our country from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad or whatever his name is. And, this has been in our circles, this has been quite clear for years. I wanted to hear your comment.
American foreign policy for many, many years was that a weapon of mass destruction impacting on Israel would be construed as an act of the use of mass weapon destruction against us. The current administration apparently has backed off from that position. But if ever there is a nation or a people on the first face of the earth that know what mass destruction is, it's Israel. They will never accept a first strike. Never.
All right. All the way to, I think, where you are there in North Carolina. Stan, you're on the air.
Yes, Art, Professor. Great show. A little background. When I was in the service, I worked for an agency, now defunct, Army Security Agency. I had read initially about the EMP that affected Hawaii during the late 50s. Mm-hmm. My question, though, is that people are talking about ICBMs. What happens if somebody wants to load a battlefield-type missile on freighters and park them off the coasts, east, west, and the Gulf of Mexico? That's going to be very little response time with any ballistic missile system.
No response time, and as Mr. Bell just pointed out a little while ago, we actually talked about that extensively at the very beginning of the show.
Oh. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, but thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. As I mentioned, please go back if you're just sort of catching up with all of this. Maybe you get up early in the morning where you are and just go back and listen to the program is what I would say. St. Paul, Minnesota. Vince, you're on the air.
Yes, first time I called in. Many, many years of listening. Professor, I sense some partiality and favoritism towards Israel. And I'm wondering, do you really think that the Middle East could have any emphasis on destroying the world without the okay of our military complex or such? I mean, you've got to be kidding me if you think that if Muslim extremists can actually do anything that the Western world can do.
When a nation is informed by a nation within strike distance that their number one goal is their total annihilation and destruction, Israel must take it seriously and must respond.
That's right. Whether or not Israel will act preemptively with respect to Iran, I don't know anymore. I'm not sure. How about you, Professor?
Well, again, my analogy, if I have my neighbors out there doing target practice and it's my pitcher on the target, I'm going to start taking that real seriously.
Yeah, that's your analogy. With what's going on right now in Israel politically.
Well, what we talked about, I think, about half hour, 45 minutes ago, political correctness can kill Israel just as much as it can kill the United States.
It certainly can. Okay, I don't have a name and a location, but Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Good morning.
For the professor, does the professor realize, I did an analysis about the grid going down. When the grid goes down, we will not go back to horse and buggy days. We will go back to hunter-gatherer days.
Actually, I think that's a fair comment, professor.
Absolutely, yes. The congressional report says 19th century technology. I say let's take a close look at the 14th century.
Yeah. Chicago, Jim, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art. Professor, I have a question about vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
Would something as simple as a lead liner attached to the underside of your hood or perhaps in the headliner of the vehicle protect us from EMPs?
Well, you need a pretty powerful suspension system to handle that, and no, it would not.
No, I was thinking more along the lines of X-ray vests that X-ray techs wear readily available. That wouldn't do it.
You got a weight load there. You have so many entry points in terms of the conductive surface of the vehicle that you'd have to pretty well coat the whole thing in a non-conductive material and then ground it.
That's another option right there.
Yeah.
And then ground it. Remember, these vehicles run on tires, right? So it'd have to be parked at home with a giant ground wire and something driven into the ground.
Okay, that's one more question I have. Does the circuit have to be energized at the time of the hit?
No.
No, the answer is no.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
You're very welcome. Cheery stuff, huh? Really cheery. Does it have to be on, essentially, was the question. No. The answer is no. Idaho, Bob, you're on the air. Good morning.
Yeah. Hi, gentlemen.
Hi.
Could not your 90% figure be optimistic if this happened in the wintertime? And you might have a revolution on your hands as well as a total breakdown of civil authority?
Well, we would have a total social breakdown, and one thing we didn't talk about, I wish we had time, is what happens with the 2 million people who are in prisons right now? Do we let them go?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, an awful lot of the cells, I think, are controlled electronically, right? So I suppose there's safeties built in so that if the power fails, the cells remain locked.
But after 2 weeks, what do you do with them when there's no food and water?
Well, it's not the guys in the cells I'm really worried about, though I suppose it's a consideration. It's all the rest of us. Food and water, well, pretty much takes us all out, doesn't it?
And you shoot them or you let them go. It's a heck of a moral question. It's one of thousands of moral questions that can compound out of this whole issue of EMP.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess I see how you get to your 90% figure. If you throw in the anarchy that is sure to follow, particularly from a relatively spoiled nation like the United States, you might just get to or surpass that 90% figure. I don't know. Portland, Oregon. Another Kathy.
Yeah.
Hi,
another
Kathy.
I had to call when you said no gals called. I think a lot of us are adding up what food we have in the pantry and trying to figure out how to feed people with all this news. But I did have an electronic question. If you're mechanisms that are electronic, small ones, were unplugged and in a Faraday cage, would they survive this or would their parts fry?
You have a good Faraday cage, you're protected.
Okay. But it has to be unplugged, right, during the event?
It has to be grounded.
Grounded, okay.
And you know the easiest Faraday cage? Take your old microwave. That's a Faraday cage. Ground
it. Microwave oven.
Don't plug it. Now, don't plug it into the wall. Run that electrical line into the ground to ground it. You have a Faraday cage.
Mm-hmm. So you might be able to get your CC radio in there. That's about it.
One quick point about women. Let's look at the statistics, mortality statistics. Women today outlive men by, what, 7 to 10 years?
That's what it said, yes.
Go back 200 years. It was absolutely reversed. Think of a pre-technological society in childbirth.
Now, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I really didn't know that. Why has that reversed? Why are women now outliving men and did not previously?
Other than death for males by violence, the average woman had about 5 to 7 pregnancies, and the possibility of mortality increased with age and also nutritional deficiency. So you notice, you look back a couple hundred years, you notice how many guys were widows marrying younger women in their third and fourth marriages? Because women died far younger than men 200 years ago.
All right. Short on time. John in Georgia, you're on the air.
Good evening, gentlemen. Professor, what we learn from history is we don't learn from history, right?
Precisely, sir. As I say to my students when I hand back their papers.
we're reliving the 30s all over again, but it's worse. We got a death cultish Hitler running a country that is, in my mind, I believe, and all I've read, they're trying to acquire, build nuclear weapons. They're arming themselves to the teeth. They're having regular conferences in the last few years entitled The World Without America. I even saw one picture of one of these conferences the president held with a banner behind him of a mushroom cloud. Mm-hmm. I mean, they regularly have rallies chanting death to America. They have committed numerous acts of war against us, killing our troops, our men and women, maiming them, killing them in Iraq. Those are acts of war. Now, if I was in charge, I would take out their leadership.
All right. I'm afraid, I'm sorry, we're going to have to cut you off at that point. I'm sure a lot of people are saying, yep, if I were in charge, here's what I'd do. Professor, it has been a pleasure having you on the air.
I've listened to you for years, and it's an honor to finally be able to talk with you. It's been a great experience.
Your book is 1 Second After, and it's been out how long now?
It's been out since March. It's a bestseller, and also through the website 1secondafter.com, you can link into some of the text sites that we talked about tonight as well.
Professor, thank you for being here. I'm sure we'll do it again. Take care, my friend. We are out of time. That's it. I want to remind everybody, you can reach me by email. I'm artbell@mindspring.com. ArtBell at mindspring, MindSpring.com. And given the opportunity, I'll be back again. You never know when. From Manila in the Philippines, I am Art Bell. Good night.